sight, hope for a generation. Yeah, yeah, hope for a generation. Just beyond my reach, but beyond my sight, hope for a generation. I see it singing, hope for a generation. I see it singing. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Got me guests here, Mike Harris from Revolution Radio, and John Carman as well, formerly of Secret Service, formerly of like the all sorts of things. He's had more jobs than I did when I was a student, all right? Like, you know, I'd do like one job here or there or whatever, you know, cut this lady's bush, cut that guy's tree down or something of that nature. This guy has literally worked for Bush. He's kind of like been at the roots of the big corrupt tree that drops all the poisonous fruit all over the country. It's fantastic. And Mike, you've been living near the border yourself for some time. Now, I want to get into a really controversial thing here that will get people to hate me. You know, I love it when people hate me for some reason. It's really stupid. It's why I'm so pathologically honest. It's in the hope that who I really am will offend and distract people from the truth. Now, we're going to talk about racism. We're going to be three white guys talking about racism. This is going to be fun. Because every single time that I talk with socialists or anything of this nature... I remember one time we were talking with, what was her name, Claudette Hoiti, who became a Member of Parliament for the New Zealand National Party, our equivalent to the Republicans, right? She recently got busted for, like, putting a grand on her parliamentary credit card for personal expenses when she's not supposed to do that. Uh-oh. And she met me one time at a meeting and offered me a job, right, making her videos and things of that nature. And we had this meeting and I tried to ask her, you know, before, if you're a truther, conspiracy theorist, blah, 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 and I mean that in a positive way, because if you're not a conspiracy theorist by now, you're freaking retarded. And the thing that she said was, oh, I believe in the New World Order, I believe in all of that. And I go, okay, well, what do you make of Barack Obama? She says, well, anybody who criticizes him is racist. I'm like, you don't know nothing about the New World Order. And have you noticed anybody who actually says you're racist, you're racist, you're racist, instead of looking at the evidence, is actually a hell of a lot more racist themselves than you are?
Well, Vinny, let me ask you a question. Nobody's been able to give me a definition. What is a racist and what does it mean?
A racist is a person who hates a particular race of people for no real good reason. They just hate them and want to hurt them and kill them and lynch them.
Well, then I'm not a racist because I don't want to hurt anybody. Yeah. You know, I just want to leave people alone to their own devices and let them go do what they do, and I go what I do, and, you know, just...
Yeah, just well, it's kind of like you call somebody a Nazi. What's a Nazi? Well, a Nazi is a person who passes draconian gun ban legislation and then uses the fact that their victims are disarmed to round them up and put them into camps for their own safety and then orderly exterminate them. That's a Nazi. And then
I've got a story for you about that. I was called, when I was running for governor of Arizona, I had some very strict border control issues out there. And someone says, you sound like a Nazi. And I looked at the guy, this is at a public forum, and I said, I wouldn't make a pimple on a Nazi's ass.
See, and again, this is what happens over time, is that words lose their meaning because people actually don't care about the meaning anymore, and they're not looking at things on an intellectual standpoint, they're looking at it from an emotional, reactionary standpoint, which is really good at derailing any kind of reasonable debate. I've got a great little picture here that I post on Facebook every now and again, and it says, are you losing the debate? Shout racist! It'll automatically derail the debate, allowing you to snatch victory.
Well, that sounds good.
See, it works. And the best thing you can do, my friend John Eisen once told me, he edits a magazine he used to write for Rolling Stone, and he said, if you're a Nazi, the best thing to accuse your opponents of is being Nazis. Takes the heat off you, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does, because it just drives the point in the opposite direction of where it was aimed.
So let's talk about what is real racism and what is fake racism. Okay, real racism is the CIA importing cocaine and heroin and specifically using agents to distribute them around black areas. That's racism, in my opinion. Would you agree?
Absolutely agree. And you look at how much of that the U.S. government has done. It's incredible how much this the CIA has done and is responsible for. And this whole drug cartel thing, the drug cartels wouldn't exist without the CIA. And now I look at this as this is another reason why to repeal the Drug Enforcement Act of 1970 and perhaps legalize a great many of these things and have an intelligent debate about it. Take the profit motive out.
Mm. And now, here's another example of racism. It is in the poor black community, in inner city projects and things of that nature. If you are married, you cannot receive any form of government compensation to help you feed your kids or anything of that nature, which means your husband, more or less, has to work 2 to 3 jobs in order to survive. And the vast majority of black males in those areas cannot put themselves through that amount of work because most people can't. And in so doing, they defather the black community. And not having a father in your early or modern life, a lot of studies have confirmed, makes you exponentially more likely to get a criminal conviction. And who's running all the private prisons right now? Isn't it? I think it's inconsequential because the mere fact of the matter is they now have a steady supply of black slave labor in the prisons, and they pay them about 20 cents an hour to do all these kind of things, and they're subcontracting all of the slave labor out to major US corporations. That, to me, is struck as racism, isn't it? Because what's the population of prisons? It's 90% black, isn't it?
Well, not enough, 90%, but it is majority black. You know, it just seems like it. And you know, the whole thing. You look at Lyndon Johnson with his Great Society, the War on Poverty, the Civil Rights Act, all these things. Something that the U.S. does not do. It's a failure of government. Is they don't look back and say, did this policy succeed? Did it not succeed? Did the war on poverty do what it's supposed to do? Did the war on drugs achieve its stated goals? Did the NAFTA agreements really result in more knowledge-based jobs if we gave up our manufacturing-based jobs? These things, they haven't worked, but yet our government is so stubborn and stupid, they won't go back and evaluate. It failed. It's an unmitigated failure. Let's repeal it. Let's do something else.
What if the so-called failure was actually the objective?
Well, that's the point. And so I said the stated goals. Did it achieve its stated goals? And let's look at NAFTA, for instance. They said NAFTA.
John, I think you've got a little bit of noise going on in the background there, man. I'm going to mute
that
your
mic.
No? I heard a little bit of rustling
around.
It was me
scooting my chair back.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Here I'm guilty. Mea culpa. But no, really, you look at like NAFTA, for instance. It's stated that this is going to be a good thing. Americans are going to get more jobs from this. We may give up a few low-margin manufacturing jobs, but we're going to get all these new knowledge-based jobs. Well, they never appeared. So NAFTA has been, in my opinion, an unmitigated failure. All of these free trade agreements have.
Well, they should have called it SHAFTA.
Yeah, they should have.
Yeah. It's like that old country song, you know, when I got divorced from my wife, she got the gold mine and I got the SHAFTA.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
I'm sorry. Racism. This has totally just derailed everything.
The thing is, I look at you know this whole great society Johnson put in place. The U.S. has spent $23 trillion since 1965. It's a lot of money. A lot of transfer of tax revenue from people who work to other people who didn't earn it. And you know, believe me, the government and all their cronies and friends are taking their cut off the top. But has it achieved anything? And I don't think it has. I think it's really set race relationships back in this country far worse than they were. You know, even before the Civil War, I think that they're at an all-time low in this country right now. And it's time for a national dialogue. Black people and white people got to start to talk and say, "Hey, we don't like how you do this. Well, we don't like how you do that." And let's open it up. Let's get this out there. Everybody's worried about this political correct agenda here. And say, look, you know, as a white taxpayer, I'm disappointed that you've got 5 generations of black families on welfare. It stinks. And the blacks can offer their things. Well, yeah, but there's racism against us. Well, yeah, show me. Where is it? Show me where the racism is with affirmative action. And it's time to really have a national debate in the USA and really around the world about what is racism? You know, how does it affect all of us all the time? Because I look at affirmative action, that's racism, brother. Whenever you're going to hire a less qualified person over a more qualified person, I want the best guy for the job. You know, if I give the example often of if I had to go in for cardiac surgery, you know, a bypass, and I've got three doctors to choose from. I have a white guy, a black guy, and an Asian. I'm picking the Asian because he's probably the best and brightest. I don't want the black guy because he's probably an affirmative action hire. That's another form of racism. And all these things that are intended to create these positives create negatives. And let's just get rid of all this. Let's just promote
people. It's like resentment. I think there's something to be said. If you put two children in a room, you give one of them a toy, and you don't give the other one a toy. The one who doesn't have the toy is going to be pissed off at the one who does, right? And that's the thing. If you're not treated equally under the law or anything like that, then you're screwed. Now, I think there's a good point about affirmative action here, and we have a local New Zealand example whereby we've one of the only countries in the world to actually have a treaty with our local population, because we couldn't actually defeat them in battle, because they were just, well, basically the New Zealand Māori invented trench warfare, which the British and the rest of the Western world stole and used in the early 1900s to great effect, or the Great War, rather. And what is happening now in New Zealand is a very interesting phenomenon based upon this racial issue of what they call treaty claims, treaty settlements. So the Māori tribes will go to the government and say, look, we've got all these lawyers and blah, 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 and they say this, that, and the other, and you need to give us money. And then the government goes, okay, we'll give you money. And then they take that money, and then they give it to themselves and their own little wealthy elite clique within that, and they don't allow people to actually benefit one iota from shares in the tribe, unless, here's the kicker, you can benefit from Māori tribal assets and land compensations and things of that nature if you manage to prove your lineage and ties to the tribe. Now, how many uneducated, downtrodden Māori are capable of doing that? And the answer is virtually none of them, which means that only the educated already and family lineage proven already Māori can actually get any benefit from the taxpayers' money that compensates their tribe for something that was taken off them 100 years ago that they've already been paid five times for in the land courts, right? So here's the interesting thing. Just like there are elites in Europe, elites in America, there are elites within racial groups and segregations and things of that nature as well, who will often take up the mantle of being the champions for social justice and the champions of equality and what have you, just so they can manipulate people and keep it all for themselves.
And that is a fact.
Right.
It's sad.
It's no different. And so when people talk to me about racism, I say, look, mate, are you part of the human race? So am I. It's the only frickin' race there is. We're all brothers in this. Now, the other element that I wanted to put in here, I'm sorry to keep talking over you, but it's when you have a conflict where people aren't aware of each other's unique cultural gifts, and culture is something that I think is far more important than race. Are you a psychopath or are you a good person? Do you engage in scumbaggery or do you engage in do-goodery? All right, those are the only things. If you want to measure somebody's character attributes, in my opinion, are they a psychopath or not? If they are a psychopath, they'll manipulate, they'll steal, they'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll do everything bad. If they're not, there's no need to discriminate against them.
No, I agree. I can't argue with that. But, you know, the thing in the U.S. that we look at here is we've got multiple generations now on there have been welfare recipients. And
sorry to interject, but I think it was it Martin Luther King or Malcolm X that said that welfare is going to destroy black America?
That was Malcolm X.
Yeah, see, there you go.
And they murdered Malcolm X. Because you look at this whole thing, it really has destroyed the black community and the black family in particular. And I tell you what, it hasn't helped the white families either, because you know there's more poor whites on welfare than there are blacks, because you know whites are a much larger portion of the population.
I'm included.
But it's a sad thing whenever it goes generation to generation. It was never meant to be an intergenerational dependency system. So you know, maybe we need to make some changes on how it is. I don't want to see anyone starve in the streets. We want to help everybody, but there are limits to the largesse of the American taxpayer. And perhaps maybe a 5-year, even a 10-year lifetime limit on welfare benefits. Does that sound reasonable, to 10 years to get your act together, to get yourself, you know, into a better situation?
I'm not sure if it's an arbitrary thing, like in terms of it should take you this much time or that much time. I think it's more like if you destroy a community's ability to be self-sustainable, then what's the likelihood that they're going to be constantly searching for a way to sustain themselves, right? And in America, it's very, very specific in terms of sabotage of the black community. I'm holding a book in my hand, The FBI War on Tupac Shakur and Black Leaders, U.S. Intelligence's Murderous Targeting of Tupac, MLK, Malcolm X, The Panthers, Hendrix, Marley, Rappers, and Linked Ethnic Leftists. And this is by an author named John Potash. So there actually is a very well-documented case of official racism. Tupac Shakur's father, for example, he was being hunted by the Chicago PD at one point, and he was staying over at a friend's place. And the Chicago PD rolled around outside his house, and they said to everybody, you know, get out, you know. And then they just started firing, just right after they warned them, and then they started firing. And these boys were on the floor, you know. They didn't stand up or anything. They weren't that stupid. And then after they stopped firing, they emptied all their little revolvers from the cars outside. And then they said, come out if you're still alive. And Tupac's father, I think he, or was it his uncle, I forget which, but he took off his shirt, he took off his pants, he took off his underwear, and he came out butt naked, all right? He told his friend to do so as well, all right? And his friend didn't. His friend came out wearing just his pants, and they shot him. The reason why is because then they could claim he might have had a gun on him.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're talking about real institutionalized stuff, and this is where it actually starts to get into that real nougaty core, when you actually have documented evidence of proven actual COINTELPRO. The reason why COINTELPRO was even started, and the reason why many of us who are truthful servants of the community and the public trust like ourselves, the reason why that was all started was because of the black civil rights movement in America and all those tactics that they used to use to sabotage, kill, intimidate, etc., to get people off their campaign trail, to stop doing what was right for their people and what they felt was good for their best communities. The same tactics are now being employed on everybody else now.
So where do you see this going, Vinny? What you live in New Zealand, and what do you see? What's your perception of the U.S.? How do you see the direction of our country going? And make some predictions for us. What do you see happening in the next 3 months, 6 months? What do you see?
Well, imagine for a moment that the U.S. is exactly the same as England, exactly the same as Canada, exactly the same as Australia and New Zealand. We're called the Five Eyes Nations because we've all signed this big treaty under Project Echelon as well to spy on each other. It's illegal. It was illegal once upon a time for all of us to spy on our own citizens. So what they did is they just made a big treaty so they spy on everybody else's citizens and share the information. I love it how that works. So what's the direction of the U.S.? It's the same direction as everything else. Down. Very much down. And as things go down, people get really angry, people get really frustrated. And traditionally throughout history, this usually brings about some form of revolution. What's problematic about this is that you're talking about a group of elites that are basically the masters of creating and fomenting false revolutions, you know? They'll always want it with some kind of like false central bank and what have you. I liken it to the freedom-loving people, those who will actually fight for freedom at the expense of their lives, sacred honor, fortunes, etc., like the founding fathers did. They're in a war against those who aren't willing to lay down and make sacrifices for the good of their nation. They're against those people who are currently dominated by self-interest and are incapable of thought unless an authority figure tells them to think in a certain way. So what I see happening is this. those people like us will soon become official targets of the establishment. We're already semi-targets under terrorism legislation. They say that people who are wearing blue jeans or make frequent references to the Constitution are people that you should be watching out for in terms of terrorism. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this is the frog in the boiling pot, that eventually the state surveillance, the scumbaggery, and the subversion of the democratic process, the judicial process, justice in general, will only get worse. And we will become targeted very, very specifically in order to eliminate our voices, our mind, and our mantra from the airwaves and from the general public consciousness. Only with the elimination of the thought and the actions of freedom-loving people can people be totally and utterly prepared to accept a dark age of tyranny that will last the next 1,000 years.
Well, Vinny, if I get renditioned, come get me out, okay?
Don't worry, bro. They'll do it simultaneously. Okay. In fact, that happened in 2008 in New Zealand, actually. We had these things called the terror raids, you know. I'm sure you've heard these things in the media in the States, you know, where they raid a big compound. They got all these guys in black uniforms, and there's like a couple of old people there or something painting in their garages, you know.
Yeah. Or they had the wrong house.
Yeah. Well, this was the biggest thing in New Zealand history in terms of terrorism raids. And guess what? 18 other countries had similar sized and similar publicly promoted media spun terrorism raids on the exact same day. All of our intelligence agencies are now coordinated at a central level, is what that says to me. And that bodes very, very bad implications for any kind of resistance, because as we well know, the entire reason why the intelligence apparatus really exists is to combat terrorism. They've now defined terrorism as somebody who actually wants freedom. That's counterintelligence.
Well, it is, and that's sad. That is really a sad state of affairs. And you know what's even worse about it? And you know, John might want to chime in on this, because this happened on our watch. We let this happen during our lifetime. And what kind of world are we going to leave to our kids if we don't pull the chestnuts out of the fire right now?
John?
Well, I'm waiting. I'm listening. I've already jumped in there with both feet because of my law enforcement background, and I suffered because of it, and I've been sent to prison. I've been on food stamps, but you can't take a program and say, okay, you can only use it for 10 years. It's abused by certain groups of people. It doesn't matter because it's the situation they put you in, and I'm in one of those hard up against the wall situations between a rock and a hard place. And the only thing I've got coming in is SSI, which is basically Social Security medical. So if I don't have a backup or an attorney in my pocket, how can you fight the system that's
Well, John, let me ask the question of, you know, was this our current welfare, this welfare society, the safety net that we've got, was this intended to go over 3 and 4 and 5 generations and have people who've never worked and never will work? I don't think that's what the intention was.
No, I agree. I mean, I went to school.
So what do we do? How do we fix this?
Well, you force people to go to school, like all these people who are not going to school. There are problems with people like a guy named Alan Burson, who was a Rhodes Scholar, friend of Clinton's. He jumps in after he left his U.S. attorney job, just as an example, and became a superintendent of city schools in the city of San Diego. And the first thing he did was go in there and change all kinds of rules and regulations. And one small part of that was a zero tolerance on fights, people fighting at school. Yeah, so if you and Vince decided to go fisticuffs for whatever reason, let's say he hit you first, doesn't matter, you're both kicked out of school. That's counter to the whole idea of getting an education. That is the wrong answer. And what they're doing is they're creating a whole civilization where people are getting into trouble because they don't have the proper teachers or the security people to let people go to get an education and not have all these other extra stressors going on because they don't have a controlled atmosphere. So they don't go to school. They go out and commit crime. they're forced to get an education when they go to prison, a GED, and then they're supposed to get a job when they get out, because that'll keep them busy, and that'll keep them in a situation where they can go ahead and contribute to a salary to support a family. But as you guys were stating earlier, the percentages of the blacks, not to pick on blacks this week, are not good. 60% or better.
Well, let's talk about education for a little bit, John, because...
Well, we're coming to the end of the break here, actually. I think we really do need one more segment, and that wraps up a perfect two-hour show. You guys all right with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll make it work.
All right, we'll be back in just a few seconds, ladies and gentlemen. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you want these kind of broadcasts to keep continuing, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, make a donation. We'll start up a regular automatic payment today through the PayPal, or if you're a New Zealand listener, the Kiwi Bank. We'll be right back with John Carman and Mike Harris talking about the problem with education. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment. We have former Secret Service John Carman and former runner for Arizona. Was it Arizona State Governor, Mike?
Arizona Governor, yes. Yeah. I actually had the temerity to stick my hat in the ring.
All right. Now, you were saying something about education. What was it?
Well, the issue with education is that we've developed this false paradigm in the country where we try to force everyone into this college liberal arts track. And you know what? That's not the way for a lot of people to go. We still need bakers. We still need butchers. We still need hairdressers. We need auto mechanics. We need welders. We need all of these things. And nobody offers that type of education out there right now. Unless you're in high school preparing to go to college on some liberal arts curriculum, that's all they want to train you for. And it's time to revamp our educational system to where we look at how are people going to be able to – not everybody wants to go to college. Everybody's got the aptitude for it. But maybe they can bake bread. Maybe they can weld. Maybe they can work on car engines or cut hair or do something. And maybe that's going to interest them more. And so maybe we ought to change our approach and allow for a more vocational track like we used to have 30, 40 years ago. To where that people can get the education that's going to allow them to support themselves and raise a family. And that's really what I want to see people do. I want to see people be able to be self-sufficient and become experts at what they do. Not everybody needs to go study philosophy at the University of such and such. Just a thought.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thought there.
Well, it is, and it's something that it's been glossed over. That once the teachers' union took over the educational system in this country, in the USA, I don't know how it is in New Zealand, but once the teachers' union took that over, all debate was over. Everybody had to go to college. Everybody has to. You're not going to get ahead in this world. Well, what do you mean not get ahead? Why can't I be the best barber I want to be? Why can't I be the best carpenter? These are good, honorable professions that pay decent money. And people can work and they can, like I said, pay for a house, car, raise a family. That's what it's about. It's get people off the welfare rolls. I mean, it's get people working. It's common sense. It's all local stuff. And, these things, get control of the school systems back in the local communities, get it away from the federal government.
Mm. Well, I think one of the problematic elements of education is that the government controls it. So is the government going to have a curriculum that forces you to question authority, think for yourself, do your own research, and have critical thinking faculties? Considering the government would not benefit in any way, shape, or form with an entire population with those mindsets.
Well, there's two chances and Slim's out of town.
Yeah. All right. Snowball's chance in hell that that's going to happen naturally, which is why the very first piece of legislation passed in Nazi Germany to discriminate against a particular group of people was not against Jews or gun owners, it was against homeschoolers. Because once the government has forcible indoctrination of your children, they're no longer your frickin' children, are they? They belong to the state, and they believe that the state is great, which is why all back in the day of Nazi Germany, so many children signed up for the Hitler Youth. And people don't even realize what the origin, you know, the X-Men Wolverine origin of public schooling actually was. Have you ever heard of the Prussian Empire? Well, of course you haven't, because they don't freaking exist anymore. They used to, back in the day, this is pre-World War One. They introduced the first public schooling education, and then they had a war with France afterwards, and they beat the pants off France. You know, and back in the day, that used to be actually quite difficult to do, to beat the French, but now it's, you know. And you know what the French did after that? They said, bro, these guys, they can just have all these recruits coming at them, willing to just show up on a battlefield and die with blood pissing out of their necks. With a big smile on their face, because they're serving their country. Because all of these kids have been indoctrinated from a very early age to think that their citizenship, their loyalty to the country is actually part of their spirit, it's actually part of their soul, part of their identity, is what we call national identity. And after this great example, everybody else started up their public education system. I've even seen real footage of US cavalry literally roping children with a lasso and dragging them to public school when they first started opening up in America. I'm not making it up. This is the whole reason for their existence. Now, how can we change this? What did schooling used to be like in America beforehand? Well, it turned out that literacy was very, very high pre-public schooling because everybody read the Bible to their children and taught them to read themselves, and nobody ever wanted for education and what have you to a large extent, because all small towns and things of that nature had their own little schoolhouse, and they had all the children from youngest to eldest being educated in the exact same room, in the exact same way. So that means the youngest could learn off the elders could teach the youngest, and so on and so forth. So it works kind of like a family, sort of like a community, much in the same way that brothers and sisters sort of work together to help each other out. You know, like if you have a girl first or whatever, that little girl grows up to be 5-6 years old and is actually now capable of helping you out raising the next child to come along. And an education system that's very similar to how it kind of worked back in the day. But everybody thought that this was a really bad idea, you know, for some reason. And now we have the dumbest group of people that have ever existed on the face of the frickin' earth. And what do they ask for? More education. And who do they ask to get that education from? The government,
of course,
who dumbed them down in the first frickin' place. You know, it's kind of like it's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy / feedback loop, isn't it? You get real dumb because you get educated in the government. Because you're real dumb because you got educated by the government, you ask the government to educate you more and dumb you down even more.
No, I mean,
did I miss something? You know,
I've seen some of those examples firsthand, but a lot of those people that get the jobs didn't get it based on their credentials. They got it based on nepotism. And I've seen some people that, even in Bureau of Prisons, they would question people because they have to have a GED. You know what a GED is, right, folks?
Oh,
General Education Diploma or whatever. Well, most people that were in crime or have a criminal background, when they got into prison, they're forced to go take classes so that they can get their GED requirements, so they can get a GED. So that means that they're making a step towards educating somebody so they can go out, get a job, contribute to society, pay taxes, and all this other BS. But, you know, it's kind of funny because it reminds me of a guy who was being checked into prison, MCC, one day. And they were asking this gentleman who was cuffed to a chair, well, it says here on your application and information that you don't have a GED. And the answer was, no, I don't have a GED. Well, why not? Well, I went to college. See, that's how stupid they are. And in order to go to college, guess what you have to have? You have to have a high school diploma. So the answer was either a high school diploma or college. It's the same answer. And these people work for the government, and that's the kind of people that work in serious positions where they handle people. Those people are dangerous. The government is inept, corrupt, and they shouldn't be handling situations like that at all.
Well, I've spoken to a number of men about the definitions of words and how we often lose those definitions and meaning. Govern means control, and mente means mind, right? In the original Latin. So when somebody's talking about a government school, mind control school. Government hospital, mind control hospital. Government agency, mind control agency. And then you wonder why all these people seem like they're under mind control. It's because they freaking are.
Well, if you control the head, you control the body.
In fact, this is part of the elite social engineering agenda to kind of... I don't know if you feel it, I mean, like I do, in a real physical sensation. It's sort of like not having enough oxygen in the air. I feel my countrymen slipping away, as if the thing that defined them once... as creative, hardworking, loving, caring, generous individuals has now dissipated, faded away in favor of groupthink or tearing apart somebody in the media like a pack animal instead of asking what their story truly is. Do you feel the same sensation in the air? A kind of trepidation about the future, not just of your nation, but of your people?
Absolutely. You know, really do. I feel that Western civilization is at great risk right now. And I say that, you know, I wasn't raised in Europe. I was raised in the United States. And so we're a mixture here of I am at least of Northern of European peoples, and I feel like all of Western civilization is currently at risk right now. And it's a very, very sad day. It's something worth fighting for.
It seems that the ability or the will to fight is sort of like something that gets stamped out. Because I recall, remember how you were just talking earlier about how if two people have a fight, both of them get stood down or suspended from school or whatever? Now, that happened to me a number of times. Like, I would literally get the crap kicked out of me, and then I'd get suspended for it. I was just like, yeah. And I didn't even start
it. What's wrong with this picture? Yeah.
And it took me about 15 years later to figure out it's to destroy your fighting spirit. To think, and it's ironic because I used to be a really violent kid. Like dad left when I was young, and even when he was around, he was hitting me all the time, and what have you. So what happens to young kids in that situation is they put the violence in their own life, and their own pain, their own fear, and then they put it onto others, and they start hurting others as a way of compensating for the pain that they feel inside. And I think the last time that I actually physically hurt somebody was my best friend. I ripped a huge chunk of hair right off of his head, and then I took that huge clump of hair in my hand out to the principal's office, and I put it down on his desk, and I said, "I just ripped this off my friend's head. I need you to suspend me." It was on that day that I realized that every single time that I was involved in violence of any kind whatsoever, or resistance starting it, doesn't matter, I get suspended. So I cut out the middleman. And cut out the waiting for them to come and approach me, and I never laid a hand on anybody again. What's problematic about this is I've been assaulted quite a number of times since then, and my body locks up. I can't fight back. It's not only destroyed my ability to attack others in viciousness or anything, which was the original intention of stopping being a violent kid, but it's also destroyed my ability to even defend myself. And I think that this is actually the phenomenon that we're truly talking about here when we hear about our nations suffering corruption or politicians, etc., playing people off against each other. We've lost our ability to defend ourselves.
Well, they're poisoning the water with fluoridation, so you might want to check your T levels, too.
Well, I'll tell you what. I talked to my dentist about that because this dope wanted to give me a fluoride treatment on my teeth. I said, there's no way. You're not putting fluoride in my mouth. And this guy gave me a lecture. These dentists are so indoctrinated to believing, oh, there's no proof of this. I said, well, don't you read? I mean, you know, go get your decon rat poison. See what number one ingredient is. Oh, fluoride. Gee, I want to put that in my mouth. That's great.
Hey, look at this sack of fluoride here. What's that? It's a skull and crossbones. What's that number there? It's a level 6. What does the 6 mean? It means biotoxin. 1 meaning you can drink it, you can bathe in it, it's water, and 6 being the highest level, meaning you have to have a breathing apparatus when it's around. Otherwise, if you're lucky, you'll die in about 10 seconds.
Well, you guys have heard of saltpeter, right?
Yes.
Yeah. My education always takes me to the Wikipedia or an encyclopedia anyway, no matter what, or I start talking to experts. And apparently the information I've got is that they've actually put this into the system throughout some of the government prisons and so forth, where they put it in certain people's food because it acts on the testosterone levels and keeps people from wanting to fight or resist.
Well, there's a couple of elements I wanted to expand to on that. This is information I can't confirm the source or whatever, but I was told by a dentist who was treating a man who worked for NATO, and he asked him what he did for NATO, and he says, well, it's my job to ensure all the NATO bases in Europe have their own self-fluoridating systems, because it's illegal to fluoridate public water in the European Union. Well, all right? And he's only fluoridating the military bases. And I thought, whoa, that's very interesting, because I recall when Joseph Stalin was rounding up Ukrainians and things of that nature, and anybody who was resisting the vicious communist takeover of the motherland would be sent to a gulag, where they had fluoride in the water. And the reason why they have fluoride in the water is because they learned a little something off the Nazis. You only need 1/4 the amount of guards if you've got fluoridated water, because everybody becomes a hell of a lot more docile. Now, does that strike you as sort of like an interesting thing, considering we sort of live in prison-like cities nowadays and under surveillance? And then we've just kind of had our, I call it psychological castration.
No, I think you're right, but your comment about Ukraine really stirs me up a bit, because I look at what's going on in Ukraine today and I realize these are the same Bolsheviks. These are the sons and grandsons of the Bolsheviks who first starved the Ukrainians during the Holodomor back during when Stalin sent the what's his name down there to do that.
Yeah, 10 or 12 million people, according.
Yeah, 15 million people were starved to death. Starved to death. I mean, what a cruel way to go. And that's what they're doing to the Ukrainians today. It's the more things change, the more they stay the same. And we've got this problem in the world. This whole Bolshevik mindset that comes from a certain religious group is just not good. And what do we do to protect ourselves from it? Because they're coming here to the USA as well.
I agree, and the thing I find very difficult dealing with people my own age is that they don't have the benefit of gentlemen like yourself, is the years of wisdom and experience. Now, I think the cycle kind of goes in maybe a 30, 40, 50-year pattern, perhaps, before you see the exact same thing come rolling around again. And I was speaking to my friend Mikhail. He's 55, and he only woke up kind of like to the New World Order conspiracy about maybe 4 years ago or so. And I said to him, bro, that's how it works. The system's so good at brainwashing you, so good at keeping you complacent, that you have to see 50 years of scumbaggery before you realize anything's going on your own accord.
No, it takes time to figure it out. I mean, none of us are born knowing what to do. We're born into a system, and the system's got these rules. It takes you the first 25, 30 years to figure out what the rules are. And then you begin to see where the deviations from what the rules are supposed to be and how they're implemented really is. It's really a sad state of affairs. You know, what's the old German saying? Too soon old, too late smart.
John, you've been quiet there for a moment there. I'm sorry. You might be it might be a bit late in the day. We've only got about 5 minutes left.
No, I was taking all this. Yeah, I know. I was looking at the time there. So I'm taking all this in. I mean, I could go on there for hours about some of the stuff. You guys have touched on subjects I didn't comment on, but I know a lot of the subjects and have dealt with them personally. I mean, you mentioned Highway Ricky Ross. I know about that case.
Freeway Ricky Ross.
Freeway, not the rapper, right?
It was ironic that he's called Freeway because the drugs weren't free, and then not called Highway because he was getting people high. I don't get. Anyway, sorry, continue.
No, no, actually, that's how he did his deals. He did them on the highways because they couldn't be followed and be out in the open a certain way as opposed to going to another location, which might be reclusive or not. And then I think Asada Shakur, Tupac's mom or aunt, I was asked to work that case when she escaped to Cuba. And that was worth at least $1 million from the FBI.
Her name's Afeni Shakur.
I'm sorry, I get them mixed up, but I looked it up and it says Asata. That's one of her aliases anyway.
Oh, sorry. There's actually two of them. There's Asata Shakur here, and her real name was Joanne Chesimard, or that might have been.
Joanne Chesimard, that's the one we're talking about, yeah. Yeah, she's the one that supposedly killed a New Jersey state trooper and then escaped. And she's been there for, God knows, over 40, 50, I don't know, 40 years, maybe. She's like 67 right now. But somebody from the FBI told me that it was okay if I grabbed this woman, took her out of that country, and dropped her off in Mexico or anywhere in the United States, and they would pay me $1 million and all this other stuff. And yet, what did they do? They came back and charged me with a conspiracy to kidnap in a foreign country on another case. You know, don't do what Doc Chapman did. I mean, he screwed up. That was another case, but that was the Max Factor here.
This kind of reminds me of a film I watched the other night called Snitch with, I think it's got The Rock in it or whatever. And there's a reason I'm doing this. The punchline's coming again, just like the last example of the New Zealand Treasury. But he's going in and his child's been arrested and he wants to turn snitch for the DEA so that he can reduce his child's sentence. You know, what father wouldn't? And what he finds out is that it's actually really, really difficult to get the DEA to bust anybody, because if you get into a circle and that circle's connected to a drug dealer higher than them, you actually need to keep informing and infiltrating and going higher and higher up the chain before they'll even bother to make an arrest. And it occurs to me that this is actually how the justice system in general kind of works. You need to get into it, and then the drug dealer tells you, okay, well, I've only just met you, so you're going to drive the first shipment. You're going to drive it. And then you get to location B, and they go, okay, we're going to change the rules on you again, and now you have to do this in order to prove your loyalty. And then he comes back, and he does that mission, and then they say, okay, you've done that, and now we're going to give you $250,000 cash if you do this to prove your loyalty. And it's kind of like you have to prove loyalty, at the same time that the people you're trying to prove your loyalty to will soon as just kill you, right? Because they don't care about you. And that's exactly how the government works now, isn't it? They ask you to keep consistently proving your loyalty until such a day as they don't want you or need you or care about you enough anymore. They're not as valuable an asset as you were once in the day, and they can just drop you like a hot potato. It's the same thing that happened to you, isn't it, John?
Well, I worked undercover narcotics, which is a different aspect. But what you just said is another aspect of how they treat people that they've got bought off at the border, for instance. And they'll pay them off a certain amount of money. But what's really stupid about these employees is that they even sold out their integrity and became treasonous to the United States to do that. And yet they still don't realize that they're exactly what you just described, was that if you're even in the system, you can only go so high. And if the head guy says, I'm tired of that guy, I didn't like the way he looked at me, cut his head off, and that's what they're doing these days. They're cutting people's heads off, in Mexico.
It's not only that, but look at how they treat our enlisted military servicemen. You know, they treat them as if they're absolutely expendable. And they don't care what they expose them to, whether it's Agent Orange or depleted uranium. They have no concept at all of what the life after service is going to be for these people. And it's really a tragedy.
I know people like that, yeah.
That's funny. That reminds me of a line from the new Godzilla movie. The boy's just getting off the plane, and he says, "Have you got family here?" And he goes, "Yeah." And he goes, and he says, And he says to him,
I heard that one.
He says, take it slow. It's the one thing they don't train you for, going back to your family after you've been away for a couple of years.
Yeah. but the point is that, you know, how do we change these things? How do we begin to implement meaningful change in our broken and corrupt system? That's what I want people to think about. I think about this every day. What direct actions can we as individuals take to bring the system down and to put something else in place that's going to be beneficial for all of mankind? That's really where I'm at. That's what I spend my days thinking about these days.
I have a cunning catchment tarpaulin statement for that. Anything you frickin' well can, right? Think about this. How many ways are we being enslaved, manipulated, lied to, and what have you? In pretty much every single way you could conceive, right? So the question is, how many ways is it possible to resist that corruption and scumbaggery? And the answer is, any way you want. As long as you're not being corrupt, as long as you're doing the opposite of what the system would really want you to ideally do, as long as you don't keep your head down and do nothing, you're doing all right.
We're doing that right now. We're helping people to educate them, and that's a small part of what our whole schedule could be. But if we had extra time, I'm sure we'd say, hey, look, we need to get these people replaced. Look at the Congress in the United States. The Senate's not doing their job. They should be impeaching a half dozen to a dozen people right now and putting them in prison, but they're not going to. They're just going to wait and ride it out and keep more damages and more damages are going to keep piling up. You know, what's it going to take? You know, and then I was doing research on Malcolm X, and I keep remembering that saying, by any force necessary. And people don't get that.
Yeah. All right. John Carman, Mike Harris, wonderful to speak with you guys again. Of course, you can check out Mike Harris on Studio B, is it? On freedomslips.com, 5 nights a week. And, of course, John Carman. You can email him john.a.carman@gmail.com if you want to correspond or do any research or anything like that. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. And please, if you want to continue this broadcast, you know, going on into the night, regardless of whether or not people listen to us or want to hear the freaking truth that they should. It's frustrating with the stupid people out there who keep voting for their own enslaved. Oh, God. Oh, my God. Yeah. Please go to thevinnyexpershow.com and donate today. Don't bust a head gasket with an aneurysm.
I love this guy. He's
great. Vinny, thank you so much for having us on. We appreciate it. Have a good day.
Yeah, I love me too. Thank you very much. We'll see you again.